stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm talking more about your undercover qualities. Those qualities or aspects of yourself for which you are in denial. Things that you have or you own or you can do, but which you have hidden away even from yourself. I'm talking more about the family pie and how you can use that to discover these qualities. And I'm playing an interview with Victoria Holland, who is principal dancer at the Sarasota Ballet Company. So hang on. Here come the show. Welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is all about you and me and everybody we know. The intention of The Lynn Show is to help you and me and everyone we know figure out that there are things about us that we are unaware of. Aspects, qualities, capacities, intuitions, abilities, ways of thinking that we long ago put what I call undercover and are in denial for. What does that mean? It means that there are things which you could be doing, I could be doing, we could all be doing, that we're not doing because we don't know we can do them. How could that possibly be true? Well, I believe that when we are small, we only have one agenda, and that is not to upset, anger, embarrass, make uncomfortable those people on whom our life depends, that is, our parents. And we observe them very closely, and we figure out either who they want us to be or who they think we are or who they need us to be. And then we, to the best of our ability, we give them that. So if a parent really wants a child to shine, let's say this parent feels inadequate. It's interesting because this can go any number of ways. Let's say this parent grew up feeling that they were not so smart and they were not as successful as they wanted to be, and so they want to live vicariously through their child. Well, that would mean that the child would be encouraged to be as smart and capable and successful and able and talented as that child could possibly be. And any hint that the child was falling down on the job might bring the child anything from embarrassment, neglect, punishment, or just disappointment. That is so hard on children if the parent seems disappointed. So such a child would focus on achieving, and any sign that they might not be achieving would be really scary, and they would want to hide that at all with in whatever way they could. Now, you might think that that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing for a kid to want to excel, to want to achieve, to want to do well, to resist the any kind of inadequacy. But in fact, as an old teacher I used to have would say about writing, have to write bad to write good. You have to fail to achieve. You have to be able to take risks in order to achieve. And risks, by their very nature, may not pan out. Well, if you cannot tolerate not achieving, then you can't tolerate risking. If you can't risk, there's a very defined limit of just what you can do. So, in an ironic way, it works against the kid who is desperate to achieve. And also, ironically, an insecure parent who feels themselves to be inadequate may want to shine reflexively, voyeuristically through their child, but they may have the opposite as well. They might see the emerging capacity, ability, shining of their child as a threat, highlighting their own inadequacy. And so that very same parent might, in fact, discourage the child from achieving, discourage the child from doing well. And the child might, well, certainly would, figure out that when it really did well, the parent was not happy, was upset, was disappointed, wanted to be the one who was smarter than, knew more. And such a child will also give the parent what the parent wants, which in this case is not to do as well as they can. Now, I don't have to explain why that's a problem, but in either case, these children have capacities they are not aware of. The child who's busy trying desperately to achieve doesn't realize that he or she can take huge risks, reach for things they hadn't thought of reaching for, aim higher than just what they think they can achieve. And so they are cut off from things that they could do, that they could the expansion of their life is limited by just what they're sure they can achieve, because achieve is what matters, right? And then, of course, the child who has learned to do less well than he or she can, we can all see the problem with that. We can all see the downside of not being able to do as well as you can. So let's imagine these children have grown up now, and their life would benefit, both of them, from being able to reach into their psyche and use that experience, that capacity that they had denied, that they had put what I call undercover. So I can imagine a woman who is in a marriage that is unsatisfactory to her. But it looks great from the outside. She's got maybe a nice-looking husband who makes a nice living. She has a nice house. She has however many children, 2.5 children. It looks great. And so from the outside, she looks like she has achieved what every woman she knows wants, the perfect life, the happy family. But she isn't happy. There are ways in which this husband, who looks so good from the outside, is not so good for her. Maybe it isn't even that he does anything terrible. Maybe he, you know, just is a regular guy and he comes home and he's, you know, doing what he can. But maybe she needs something that this guy cannot give. But she cannot imagine leaving this family, even if this guy is unkind, critical, alcoholic. I mean, there are all kinds of terrible things that people do in marriages, but she is stuck with her need to look like she has achieved the perfect whatever life, right? Because she can see still the look on mom or dad's face when she was less than perfect for them, less than achieving. And that look, although it's just a flash, and she probably isn't even consciously aware of it, it triggers a neuron in her brain. And the neuron triggers a chemical. And the chemical says, don't rock the boat. Don't do anything that's going to make you look like you failed. Stay where you are, even though it's awful, because you need to continue to look as though you have achieved. Now, I don't have to say very much more about how this need to look successful can undermine a life, lead to a lot of dissatisfaction and unhappiness. Of course, the male version is equally true, as a guy who's gotten to the top of his profession but hates it. I have a client for whom that's true. He's a very, very successful physician, and he's stuck. Ironically, he wanted to be a lawyer, but his father wanted a doctor in the family, and he was in nothing if not a good boy. So he became a doctor, and he's very smart and very capable, but very unhappy and unable to give up this successful practice because he can't take the risk. Okay, so we can see how needing to continue to look successful, that is, I'll talk about it now. The capacity to take the risk, to fail, to be okay with that is undercover, but the need to look successful and achieving, that's a cover story. That is the cover story of the woman who can't leave the husband and the cover story of the man who can't leave his job, because their cover story says, I achieve, I succeed, I look great, right? Never mind that undercover they have the capacity to take the risk, to reach for more when this is not satisfactory or happy. Okay, well, what about the underachiever? The person who learned to look inadequate. Well, I mean, it's not rocket science. Such a person is quite often stuck in situations they don't want to be in. But they don't reach for more because their cover story is, I don't succeed. I'm not very capable. I fail. I can't do very well. So their capacity to succeed is undercover. They don't know about it, so they don't take the chance either. Now, in the last few shows, I've been talking about the family pie exercise. So if you listen to those shows and or you read my book, oh gosh, I haven't said anything about myself in this show, have I? Well, maybe I'll take a little detour here and tell you that much of, well, all of the information I'm talking about here comes out of my book, which is called When You Can, You Will, and why you can't always do what you want to do and what to do about it. And if you're interested in the book, or me, or you want to ask me questions, or you want to listen to the old podcasts, like if you didn't hear the shows in which I talk about the family pie, they are all up on my website. And my website is thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, L-Y-N-N-E, because if you do, you'll get a different The Lynn Show. And so if you're, as I said, interested in listening to the podcasts, the other old podcasts, or this one for that matter, if you want to hear it again, or if you want to find out about the book, it also comes with a workbook and an audio book, or if you want to ask me a question or talk to me, oh, Lord, I didn't say I'm a psychotherapist. I launched right into what the show is about and didn't tell you anything about myself. So I'm a psychotherapist. I've been in private practice for more than 30 years. Currently, my practice is all on the telephone. So if you have any curiosity about psychotherapy, you can also get that information on my website, thelynnshow.com. Okay, so the family pie. If you did the family pie, then you have a picture of all of the qualities that exist in the system which is your family. You do the family pie on your family of origin, although you can actually do it on your current family. And if you've done it on your family of origin, you might want to try and do it on your current family. If you've done it, as I said, you have a picture of all of the qualities that exist in your family system. So, if you are one of those people who, for whom achievement is all, and success, and looking good, and not taking the risk to look bad or fail, my God, fail, look in your family pie and see if there's somebody in your system who fails all the time, takes these enormous risks and screws up. Or if it's the other way around, let's say you're the one who can't quite pull it off. No matter what you do, something goes wrong. Look in the system. Is there somebody who's busy achieving and looking good? Okay. I'm going to tell you something you may not believe, but I do believe. And that is, all of the qualities in all of the pie pieces in your family exist in all of the people. So, if you're the person who hasn't been able to achieve, but there is an achiever in your family, you have the capacity to achieve. You have placed it under cover. You are unaware of it, but it is there. And the opposite is equally true. If you're the one who got stuck with the I have to look good at all costs, and there's somebody in the system who screws up, then the capacity to take risks, make mistakes, fail on the way to new achievements, that's yours too. But you have hidden it undercover, where you no longer know that you have it. So, why is this important? Because if you need this other quality, let's say you're the wife who's stuck in a family, in a marriage she can't leave because she's afraid to look like she failed, you need the capacity to be okay with failure. If you're the man who's in a job that you really don't like but you can't leave because you're afraid to fail, you need the capacity to risk failure. And if it's in the system, it means it's in you. If you bought the myth that you cannot achieve, and there's an achiever in your family, then the ability to achieve is in you. Okay, how do you get it? Well, that's, of course, the tricky part. Because everybody is identified with their cover story. Mom and Dad made it clear, this is who we need you to be, or who we think you are, or who we tell you you should be. And we're all reluctant to renounce our identity, our cover story, even if our cover story is getting in the way of our happiness, and undercover we have something that would make us happy. So what I want to suggest to you now is that you look at the pie and see if there are qualities there that you would like, qualities there that would enhance your life. See who has them. Just observe it for now. Just recognize who got assigned the qualities that you would like to have. And also understand that you probably have qualities that they need, even if they are not aware of it. So, for now, that's enough. I know that's quite a lot of information. And what I want to encourage you to do is just think about this. Think about what might be lurking undercover. What is it that you can do that you haven't taken the risk to do? May not even believe in. Okay. So, one of the other thing I do on my show, besides talk about this stuff, is I play interviews that I have done with people who make their living or their life with an art. I do that because those people are people who are exactly who they are. They are living out themselves. As I have sometimes said, for most people, their job is what they do, but for writers and artists, their job is what they are. So when I interview these people, you can hear the connection to themselves, to their deepest self. And the reason for that is unfortunate. It is that in order to be an artist in our culture, it has to be who you really are. Because we make it so hard on artists that only people who are deeply connected to their need to be this artist can actually do it. This month, I have been interviewing exclusively dancers in the Sarasota Ballet Company. As you probably know if you've been listening to my show, I live in Sarasota, Florida, where I am recording this show. And in Sarasota, which, by the way, calls itself the arts capital of Florida, and it definitely is, one of the arts that we have here in spades is the ballet, run by Ian Webb, whose interview you would have heard over the summer. This company has taken off because Ian is so well respected in the dance community. He has been able to bring remarkable ballets here, and he has chosen remarkable dancers. If you've been listening, you heard his wife, Margaret Barbieri. You heard Octavio Martin and Yaima Franco, who escaped from the National Ballet of Cuba through Mexico, a hair-raising escape, which, if you're curious, you can hear the podcasts of. And today I am playing an interview with Victoria Holland. Victoria is the youngest person that I have interviewed today, and you can hear that her journey towards principal dancer in the Sarasota Ballet began, however sketchily, at age 2. So this is a lovely story by a beautiful and talented and quite brave young woman. You will hear how she's dealing with an injury. So before I say any more, I'm simply going to introduce Victoria Holland. Here she is. So I am sitting here with Victoria Holland, who is a principal dancer in the Sarasota Ballet. And this is your second year?
My fourth year.
Your fourth year.
Year is principal, but fourth year with the company.
Yeah. Okay. Let me just explain what I do. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. Clearly that is what you are doing.
Yes.
Okay. And I always ask them the same question, and that is, how did it happen?
Oh, well, I started dancing when I was 4. Well, actually two. I quit when I was two. I didn't like it at first, and then I went back when I was four.
Wait. How does one start dancing at two?
My mom just put me in like a little like baby ballet and tap class, and I cried every time she left the room.
Really?
Yeah, I just didn't want to let go of my mom, so like it was just like a couple weeks into the year.
Do you remember it?
I don't remember it, no.
You just know that she told you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and then I remember my dad telling me one day that he was bringing me to dance class, and he asked, "Do you really want to go?" And I was like, "No, I don't want to go." And so they're like, "Okay," and they let me take a couple years off, and then I started back when I was 4 years old with my friend, so it was better. Went in with a friend, and we had fun doing it, so.
So this was something that your parents wanted for you?
Well, I mean, initially it was just something to, you know, a little girl, put her in dance class. It'll be cute. I don't think they ever imagined
that like, you'd have a, that'd be a career.
Yeah, right. No. So, but I just, when I was about 11 or 12 years old, that's when I really fell in love with ballet. I had a teacher who, because I did all the jazz and tap and all that stuff, but I had a ballet teacher when I was 11, and she really explained, like how to do things, not just do it just because I said so. It's like, you do this because it will help you with this, and she explained how to do the movements, and I was like, oh, it kind of makes sense, and it gave me something to work towards, so that's what really made me fall in love with it, because there was a thinking process to it as well, not just, you know, look at the teacher, copy her. So
it's interesting, because it sounds like you're saying that it's more intellectual than physical for you.
Well, it's both.
To begin with, anyway.
To begin with, yeah, because, I mean, when you're young, you can kind of feel like you can do anything.
Yeah.
So when you added that intellectual step to it as well, it was like, oh, that's a little more of a challenge. I have to think about how to do stuff. Don't just do it. And
So do you think that challenges intrigue you?
Oh, yeah. I like to be challenged. I mean, if things are too easy, then it becomes boring. And that's the thing with ballet. There's always room for improvement. So, you know, it's not, even when it feels great, there's always something to work on. So
I see.
Yeah.
So ballet works for you on all the levels, right?
Yes.
I mean, you know, it feels good to do. You're proud of it when you do it well.
Right.
And you never graduate.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Right, there's always something to work towards.
Okay, so you're four, you and your friend are going to ballet class, and okay, it's fun, and then you're 11, and you meet this teacher who gives you something that you didn't have before that makes you really want it.
Yeah, it became a challenge for me. It was something to work on, something to work for and towards. I had a goal.
Yeah.
So then I started going to a ballet school, and so I just stuck with the tap and jazz and everything, but I went to just a strictly ballet school on the side as well, and just grew to love ballet more and more, and that became my thing, I guess. I was like, even in like high school, I was like the ballet dancer. And
so what ballet school, you mean after school, like extracurricular, is that what you mean?
Right, yeah.
Right. And so that, was it a serious,
For the area I grew up in, Central New York, so for the area I was in, it was a good ballet school, but when I got to high school, I realized I had to go somewhere away and to be challenged even more, and so my senior year of high school, I went to New York City to Ellison Ballet, and I worked with Edward Ellison in his school, and that was, I have to say, even today, that was the most challenging year of my life.
Really?
He's an amazing teacher, but every day you had to give 200%, like 100% wasn't enough, and that really, like, made me think about, is this really what I want to do, because this is hard work, like, you know,
There are challenges.
Right, I came from, you know, a smaller ballet school in upstate New York to go to New York City to work with this great teacher, and I was like, wow, there's a lot more I can improve on, but it was great, like, I owe most of my training to him. He just reshaped everything, and I feel like I really improved that year working with him, and the year after that, I ended up going to Boston Ballet's trainee program and for a year, and then I came here the year after that. I auditioned for Sarasota Ballet, and
wow,
that's my fourth year here.
So it went pretty quickly for you, I mean, to get from, you know, I'm training to I'm principal dancer.
Fought faster than I thought it would, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, there's a point, I know that year I was in New York training, there was a point where I was like, can I do this? Can I become a professional dancer? Like, I started doubting myself. I was like, I don't know if I'll ever make it in a company. Like, this is such hard work. Like, I don't know if I'm good enough. And it was, a really challenging year for me. So now to be in a company and be not just in a company but a principal dancer, I'm like, wow. I still can't believe it's happened. Like,
well, so what is there left now?
Well, I actually have a big challenge this year because I had surgery over the summer on my ankle.
Oh, my.
I got injured the end of last season. I had an extra bone in my ankle, and they had to go in and remove it this
What
summer.
Do you mean that you had an extra bone?
It's called an ostragonum. And
you mean it came with the territory of your foot?
Yeah, I was born with it, and I think a lot of people are born with it, but they don't really notice it because...
They're not trying to be
right,
blind.
Right. But because of the line of work we do, you know, it can cause problems. So it broke off, and it caused me a lot of pain the end of last season. So I was out for 4 months not wow. dancing. That's a long time. I mean, for us to even take, you know, 4 days off
right,
is a
right,
long
right,
time.
Right, right.
So 4 months, I, like, couldn't believe I took that much time off. And so right now I'm still trying to get back into the swing of things, and recovering from an injury is really hard work. So
yeah.
You have to, like, retrain your whole body. Like, I didn't realize how strong, like, we are as dancers and how much I had trained my body to do and how much it did on its own until I, like, took 4 months off. I had to do it all over again. I was like, well, I can't believe I actually did this before, like, without even thinking about it. And now I have to think about it more. And
right.
It's been a challenge.
Well, you said you wanted them.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Be careful what you ask for.
I know,
right?
Exactly.
Right. Okay, so... clearly, though, this is something you're intending to do. I mean, this is not, you know, you are committed to doing it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
I want to get back so bad. I'm itching to get back.
To be able to do what you were doing before.
Right, perform, like, to the quality and the level I was at before. And, you know, even where I was before, I wanted to improve. So now to have to take a step back is really hard and frustrating. So
what does improve mean? I mean, let's assume you're back where you were. What does improve from there mean?
Well, technically, you know, being able to do steps correctly and execute them better. But also artistically, you want to grow as an artist, especially once you going from a school to being in a company. I realized the most what I improved the most on going from school to a company was my artistic ability, I feel like. Because in a school, you just do class every day. And you might have a performance here or there, but in a company, it's your job to perform. So to gain and grow with your artistic
quality. So talk about that, about what that means, to be more artistic.
It's like the quality of your dancing, and if you're doing a role, like a character role to... Basically, acting.
Yes.
And
So this is what I understand you're saying, but I'm not sure that you might be doing the same steps in this role as you're doing in this role, but you'd be doing them differently if this is a princess and this is a bear.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's the character that you want to portray, and mm-hmm. so it's how you do the steps and.
Yes.
And
yes.
Come across to the audience.
Yeah, like, it's not just the steps.
Right.
Right.
It's like it's something within that it can't really be taught. I mean, you can be coached on it, and people can give you ideas and maybe what they did when they did the role, but it's something you really have to find within yourself and really think about and explore. And
Actually, I was going to ask that question, whether that you get any teaching or coaching on that. Yeah, go ahead.
Last year when I did Giselle, Margaret Barbieri was coaching me on it, and she would always say, you could try this, like, because Giselle's very, you need to be able to have all ranges of a character, because she goes from this, like, sweet, innocent girl to going mad, like, she goes mad, and the end of the first act, and then the second act, she's a willy or a spirit, so it's very soft, and you have to be ghost-like, and so there's a big range of qualities there, and she would always give me ideas or suggestions or what she might have thought about when she did it, but she always said, but find what works for you, because mm-hmm. you have to make it your role, so find what works for you. So that was a great piece of advice, too, because you can't just copy what someone else did when it comes to that kind of
thing. Well, what I'm thinking is that you can,
copy what somebody else did, but it won't, if it isn't true for you, then it won't feel true to the audience.
Exactly.
Right. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting because, you know, I suppose I'd never thought of the importance of the acting piece mm-hmm. to a dancer. So are some roles easier for you to act than others?
Yeah, my personality is kind of quiet and reserved, I guess. So to do kind of maybe a more evil role or more
fiery. Well, what about the mad?
That was actually, I loved that because it wasn't like me. So to be able to do something totally different from what I'm used to, it was so much fun for me to get into that. But like I said, to do like an evil role maybe or more like fiery, spicy kind
of
character.
Give me an example of what would be an evil or a fiery role.
Well, for like fire, spicy role would be maybe like Khitri from Don Quixote. Mm-hmm. Or like an evil role. We did Checkmate a few years ago, so mm-hmm. the Black Queen. That would be more of a challenge for me because I'm not used to doing that and I haven't had many roles like that and it's not my personality. So that for me, personally, mm-hmm. that would be a more difficult role to do. I'd really have to think about it and study it and, you know, just maybe go in the mirror, in front of my mirror at home and just explore like how I would portray that role. So.
Well, a couple of things occur to me about that. One of them is it's a challenge. But the other is, you know, I'm somebody who believes that we have hidden depths. We have the person that we think we are, the person that we are mostly demonstrating in the world, but then we have these other things inside of us that we don't demonstrate very much, but are nonetheless true for us. And I'm wondering if you would have an opportunity to surface some of that stuff which you might not normally demonstrate and might not even like about yourself. Do you know what I mean?
No, I know what you mean, yeah. I mean, I would love to be given the opportunity to do that because it's a challenge, and mm-hmm. I like that that stuff. So, yeah, I think it would be fun. It would be a lot of hard work, you know, to get to that point where it would be believable for the audience, like believable for me and the audience.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking that, well, maybe there's never a good time to be evil.
Right.
I don't know. But more assertive, more demonstrative, mm-hmm. Larger, louder, more, less reserved.
Yes.
There may actually be times in your life when that would be good for you to be able to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you found that person inside of you when you were doing a role like that, it might even benefit you in your life.
Yeah.
Is this a stretch?
Maybe. I mean, I haven't really had an opportunity to do that in a performance yet. But
or in life.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, all right. So, were your parents surprised when you, the little girl who wouldn't go to dance class, becomes a ballerina?
I mean, like, I decided around, like, 12 or 13 I thought that's what I wanted. I'm like, I think I want to be a ballet dancer. Let's try and go for it. So they kind of, like, knew I loved it all along. But when it came to the point when I graduated from high school of going to college for ballet or, going to audition for companies, I think they were a little surprised because they always thought I would just go to college. That's what you do when you graduate high school, you go to college. And
right.
When I was talking to them about it, deciding what to do, I didn't want to go to school. I went to Boston the year after I graduated high school, and I wanted to audition for companies and just focus on ballet and maybe do school later. And so I think that might have hurt them a little bit because, you know, they wanted me to go to school. But they've always been so supportive of me. And, you know, they didn't fight me on it at all. They're like, if that's what you want to do, then
that's great.
Do it. You know, I remember I auditioned for Butler University. And when I had declined to go there, they called up my house and said, is there anything we can do? Can we give her more of a scholarship, like, to come? And they gave me a great scholarship, and my mom had to tell them on the phone, no, she's not going to go to school. And she's like, it broke my heart to say that, because she's like, you had a scholarship to go, but they've been so supportive, yeah.
Do you have siblings?
No, it's just
me. It's just you?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And so I imagine Do they still live in...
They still live in upstate New York, but they come to almost every show they can, so it's nice
to have them here. You picked a very nice place for them to have to come to.
I know, like a mini vacation.
Right. That was very sweet of you.
Yeah, they enjoy it.
I'm sure.
Especially from the cold winters to come
yes,
here.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure. Okay, so in addition to dancing roles that require you to access parts of yourself which you don't usually access, and developing your artistic ability, are there other things you want to do, either with your career or in your life?
Well, right now, I mean, in the present, my focus is to get
better
from my injury. I mean, yeah. It's really thrown me back, and I've been...
Have you got a time frame for that? I mean, are they telling you... I mean, I'm sure they don't want you to rush.
Right. Ian's really good about it. He's always like, you know, be careful, don't push yourself too much, because that's how you get injured again.
Yes,
if you come back too fast. So he's been great about it, and, just take your time getting back. But me... Like, personally, I want to get back right away. I mean, I've been out for so long. I just want to get back and perform on stage.
So. Oh, yeah. So you can't perform until you're better.
Right. I won't be in this October show, but I'm working on being in the December show, so that'll be good.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So are you... the training, it's the company that's helping you get back, or you have... I don't know, sports medicine or...
I did physical therapy. I just finished last week, actually. It was my last appointment. But, yeah, just taking company class here and our ballet mistress and ballet master here, just giving corrections and helping me.
Yeah.
You know, they know what I went through, so they try to give me corrections in class that will help get me stronger.
Yeah, so everybody's pulling for you and on your side,
and
you feel the support.
They're so great about it, yeah. And the company members as well, yeah.
This is a good company to be with?
I love it here. I mean, I feel like us as a group, we all get along so well, and it's kind of amazing that, because we see each other every day, all day, but we do. We're like a family. We get along so well, and I love everyone here.
Do you think that that's traditionally true of dancers, or do you think that has something to do with who Ian picked, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, I've never... I was in Boston Ballet, but I was only a trainee, so I was still in the school. I worked with the company a bit, so I didn't really see how the company interacted that much. So this is kind of my first company, but I just feel like every year we get closer and closer as a company. So,
that's great.
I mean, we've been together longer, so of course we're getting closer, but we don't get sick of each other.
No.
We all get along real well.
That's
so,
great.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay, so is there anything I should have or could have asked you about your life as a dancer that I didn't?
I don't know. It's not, I mean, you see us on stage, I guess, and you think, oh, they look so nice, and we're supposed to make it look easy, so,
right.
I mean, but it's not as easy as you think. Like, it's so much hard work, and, like, in the studio, we're like...
Actually, that is the last question I ask, which is, having given as much of your life as you have, to this art, the art of dance, and I mean, really, from the time you were four, right, more or less, this has been, right? So think about what that feels like, to have dedicated an entire life. You didn't do the thing that your parents might have expected you to do, that other people did, that you chose this commitment, this direction, this passion, this attachment, right? Just think about it for a second and tell me what comes to mind when you think about that, about what it's like to have dedicated all of your life pretty much to this.
I know when I was in high school it was really hard because, you know, every day after school I have to go to ballet. And I missed out on a lot of the like the football games and the after school clubs and activities and even like birthday parties because I went to ballet and I didn't skip out on ballet to go do that. So-called fun stuff, and it was hard to miss out on that, and sometimes my friends didn't understand or get it, but, you know, being where I am now, it's so worth it, because I'm doing a job that I love. Like, I can honestly say I love my job, and, you know, not everyone can say that out there. Yeah. I have a lot of friends who just graduated college, and, you know, they don't know what they want to do with their lives, or they're doing jobs that they're not that happy with, they thought they wanted to do, but they're not that happy with now, and, like, I'm just thinking, I'm so lucky to be able to do what I love, and so it's all paid off.
So it's very hard work, and there are prices to pay for it, and you have to make choices, and you make sacrifices,
yeah.
And it's all worth it.
Right.
That's great. Thank you very much, Victoria.
Thank you.
So, it's hard work. It requires sacrifice. You have to give up things that you might otherwise want to do. This is, of course, particularly asking a lot from a teenager, when everybody is doing the things that people want to do as teenagers, and you have to spend your time working. Why would you do that? Why would you do that indeed? Because you love the thing. Because it speaks to you. Because it captures you. Because it is you. And the gift that you get from that is that you are spending your life doing something you love, when most of the rest of the world is not. So, what about you? Are you doing what you love? Or are you one of the most of the rest of the world who find that you are bored, annoyed, unhappy, depressed, that the way you spend your days, the things that you do with your days, the ways that you are treated, the ways that you allow yourself to be treated, don't feel good? So, of course, you know that I think that inside of you, undercover, you have the capacity to be living the life that fits you, the life that is your own. Not a cover story life. That is, I do this because everybody does it, because my parents thought I should, because I need to prove something, because I'm afraid or embarrassed or ashamed to say I want this or this or that, or this is who I am. So, you know, that is the whole intention of this show, is to play interviews with people like Victoria, so you can hear what it sounds like when a person is themselves, when they are demonstrating, acting out what is correct for them. They're in sync with themselves. And you hear it in Victoria, young as she is. And apparently, she began to know it at 4, although at 2 she didn't want to leave her mommy. But at 4 she saw the fun in dance, and by 11 she knew it was hers. So again, it is my hope that as you listen to these interviews, you are feeling the stirrings inside of you, those parts of yourself which you have, for one reason or another, been forced to deny, to hide, even from yourself. And as they stir, hopefully they are making themselves known for what they are. Okay, so I want to tell you, I've been lucky enough to be spending a fair amount of time in New York City in the last month or so, and I am born and bred. I am a New Yorker. You know, they say, once a New Yorker, it doesn't matter where you live, you're always a New Yorker. And so I am too, even though I would not want to live anywhere but Sarasota, which is a spectacular place to live. But I was in New York City, and I was able to go to the theater many times, which is also one of my favorite things to do. If you've been listening to the show, you know I go to everything that I possibly can. And so I want to do, I'm not a reviewer, I don't even do the reviews for my show, but I do want to give a couple of plugs. If you're going to be in New York City, or you're going to be someplace where this tours, if you can get a chance to see Million Dollar Quartet, by all means, go to see it. I'm a musician, so I'm particularly interested in music, but by the end of this show, everybody in the theater is on their feet. And I don't know how many people I've told to see it, and everybody of any age, of any ethnicity, of any anything, everybody has the same reaction. Apparently, in the 50s, a man named Sam Phillips, who had a record company called Sun Records, discovered and was the early recorder of Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, Carl Perkins, and Jerry Lee Lewis. And although he lost them all to major labels soon enough, there was one night when all four of these guys were at the studio. And this apparently is a real event. At the end of the show, they show a picture of the guys and play one of the songs that he apparently recorded when they were there. But they relive this on stage. The performances are unbelievable. The music is terrific. And as I said, the entire audience rocks out. It's just the energy in that room is just unbelievable. So if you have an opportunity to see Million Dollar Quartet, by all means do. I also want to recommend Memphis, which won the Tony this year, I believe. And it is also a wonderful, wonderful show. If you're at all, if you like musicals, if you're at all interested in the early development of rock and roll, what they used to call race music, and how that came to be popular. And it's also based on a real story, a disc jockey in Memphis. I'm not going to tell you any more about it. It's a really interesting story and also worth seeing. And the other thing I want to recommend is a play called Freud's Last Session. Now, you might think, you know, oh, well, she's a therapist, and so, you know, she would go to see anything that had Freud in the title. And you would be right. I would go to see anything that had Freud in the title. But this particular play, it's a two-character play. And it is apocryphal. It didn't happen. It's a meeting between Sigmund Freud at the very end of his life. He's dying. And C.S. Lewis, who wrote all those Narnia books. Apparently, C.S. Lewis had been an atheist. And this is factual, and converted as a grown man to Christianity and became a, advocate, right, of Christianity. And Freud, as you may or may not know, is the man who's famous for saying that religion is the opiate of the populace. Freud did not believe not only in Christianity, but in God. He was a fervent atheist. And the play is a meeting of these two men and their argument, their discussion, their trying to disprove the others and trying to convert the other and trying to demonstrate how their position is unassailable. It's so well written and so interesting. If this is the sort of thing that you like, you are definitely bound to like it. So I was lucky enough to get to see all these things, and I did want to pass on this information, and I will be going back again soon, and I will let you know what I saw and whether I liked it or not. And if you, by the way, this just occurred to me, if you've seen something that you want to tell me about and I can pass on to my audience, please go up on my website, thelinshow.com, and email me. There's a link to email me, and tell me what you saw and what you thought of it. And you can be my reviewer at large. I would like that very much, actually. Okay, so I think we're about running out of time, and so before the end of the show, as I always do, I need to thank Josh Hackney. Now, as if you've been listening, you know, Josh shows up here and corrects the sound for all of my shows so that I, as I say, anything that sounds good in the show is Josh's job and responsibility, and anything that doesn't is something he couldn't fix that I did. But in addition to that, I am trying to create a web presence, and this requires all kinds of learning curves, which I am not in a position to do. So things like, basic things like how I get things into my digital program to put in the show, how I get them out of the digital program and into iTunes so that I can make CDs for people, because I like to send copies of the interviews to people I've interviewed. Now, sometimes I can do that in an MP3, and Joss has shown me how to do that, and I know how. But, you know, these are late learnings in my life, and so I forget. But Josh is always there to either walk me through it on the phone or come here and do it for me. And I really encourage you, if you've got issues with computers, with electronics, with any kind of gadget, with recording, you want Josh Hackney. And you can get him in the same way you can get me, by going up on my website. Again, it's The Lynn Show. Don't forget the E in Lynn. And click on Email Me and say, I want Josh. Or I have a review for you, or I have a question for you, or anything you'd like to say. So, as always, I hope you learned something here, got something that you can use, something you didn't know, or something you knew but had forgotten. Anyway, you know, something that'll bring you back. Because I will be here next week, same time, same station. And I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't. That I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang, so you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten